We're going to talk about the role of the husband. But ladies, you're welcome to be in here with us. But here's the caveat that I want to put strongly up front as I begin this, okay? Usually in a conference like this, in fact, I can't think of any time I've never done it this way, there would be an hour on the husband, an hour on the wife. Makes sense, right? You know, both have different issues, different things that God says. Because of the time and everything we're trying to get into the conference, we're not going to address the wife. Yeah, I'm sure. So you can be happy right there and clap, but now listen to this. It doesn't mean you're less sinful. Clap. Clap for that. Yeah. It doesn't mean God doesn't have things to say to you specifically. Clap again. But here's what I'm going to ask you. Be careful. If I had to choose, the reason I said yes to this, they presented this, said, would you be willing? I was like, The reason I said yes is even in a marriage with counseling, if push comes to shove and someone was to say to me, here's a bad marriage, you can only meet with one or the other, I'll say, give me the husband. Because he's the leader. And I have seen time and time and time again, if you can get that husband to begin to understand what God says and to begin to repent, it has such an impact on the woman. So if I can only have one, I'll take the man. So that's the deal. But here's what I want to say, ladies, since it's very easy if you're not careful. Normally I would say, all right, here's the role of the husband. You heard his stuff, but please don't get all excited about his stuff. Next hour you listen to your stuff, well, you're not going to hear your stuff. Don't use what I say in this hour as a club against him. You know what I mean? Like, when are you going to start doing everything Brad said? Remember what he talked about? I'm holding the notes up in front of him. Don't do stuff like that. All right? So just pray and say, oh God of the heavens, we both heard that. He was there. All right? You ready now? Those are the rules. That's the only reason I'll do this. Rules of engagement. It's the only reason I'll move forward based on this. You're not going to use it as a club. You're not going to think you're less sinful. You're not going to ignore the fact that there's plenty that God would say to you. But oh my goodness, the Bible starts with the man. When God went looking for Adam and Eve, who'd both sinned, right? Whose name did he call? Say it. Adam, where are you? So that's what we're doing right now. Starting with the man. Here we go. Men in general, but husbands in particular, I feel like today, are rarely ever shown in a positive form on television or in movies. Are there bad dads? Oh yeah. Are there doofus men? Oh yeah. Are there selfish, abusive, dictatorial men both outside and inside the church? Oh yeah. But for crying out loud, it seems like every sitcom, which I choose not to watch, I'm just abused with the commercials at the gym if I'm near a television, and movies, the guy's always just a doofus. Then there's two extremes. Here's what I've noticed. There's two extremes on men, how they're portrayed in television or in movies. He's either a Rambo, he just speaks in short phrases, not very smart, but can tear things up and blow stuff up. Or he's passive and slightly effeminate, withdrawn. Nothing in the middle. And most of us as guys would acknowledge, we're not perfect by any means, but there's a lot of guys that are just, they're in the middle some. They're in the middle. But our culture does not portray it that way. And what happens is, because of the Rambo abuse, I feel like there's a real push to keep men from being men. So let me say something I think, guys, you will like to hear. There's nothing wrong with wanting to blow stuff up. Let's hear it, man. Huh? God made us that way. We like fire. We like explosions. We like guns. We like risk. We like jumping off stuff. I mean, if you're a mother and you're raising kids, just get adjusted to the fact your boys are going to want to jump off stuff and take risks. And just, it's not like, don't try to make them a girl. All right? And I'm a guy that likes to jump off stuff, and I love to draw, and I have that whole left brain thing, whatever side it is. I got a little bit of both going on. But there's something that God did with us that we do. We want to conquer something. We want to explore. We want to take risks. We're not as scared, typically. Let's not lose that. But the abuse of that is when it goes too far to where that you know, it's like, well, he doesn't know how to have a conversation. He's never read a book. Then we're over here. It's like, this is too far over here sometimes. He's baking brownies. He's got an apron on. He's vacuuming. He's bathing the kids. I'm all for guys being more servant-minded and don't have this mentality of, I've never changed a diaper. But in general, right? In general, I'm outside tearing stuff up and putting stuff back together and doing stuff, and I'm not going to bake brownies for Vicky's women's group that's coming that night, but I've got some friends that do. I'm like, dude, what is wrong with you? You know, and then Vicky learns of what he's doing, and then I get this pressure. It's like, no, that is not happening. Not baking brownies. But I'm not saying I can't throw a load of laundry in. So like when we had little kids, we have five kids. When we had little kids, so it's not this sharp line of demarcation. Oh, that's women's stuff. This is guy stuff. I mean, I can do a serious pan of portobello mushrooms with garlic salt, Parmesan cheese, and a stick of butter. You would die for it if you like that kind of stuff, and I do. But I just have a few specialties. That, grilling steaks, and waffles. That's it. A man could live on that right there. But I don't cook in general. But when we have five little kids, I noticed, whoa, I think she's about to lose it. She cannot do all this. And I'm here on Monday nights. I'm here. I don't have a meeting. And I love to watch Monday Night Football. And I thought, oh, you know what? The laundry room's downstairs. It's right outside of the den. I said, honey, I'll do the laundry. So I did that for a couple years. We had five little kids. I can just, on commercials, run in there, go from washer to dryer. It's not that complicated. I learned to separate whites and darks. I learned what the gentle cycle was for some of that other stuff, you know, and I could do it. And just boom, 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 boom. And then I've got mounds of laundry. And then I can even fold laundry while a running back makes a good run down the field. Hey, women, it's like they multitask. I can multitask. Laundry and Monday Night Football. So I did that for a number of years. But do I still do that? Oh, no. Kids are older. But just, you know, just to share the load, but in general, allow men to be men. God made us different. Oh, yeah. God made us different. Don't try to make men women. The same thing I'd say, don't try to make women men. And this may offend some of you, but I delight in the wonder and beauty. Ladies, there's the way God made women is just amazing and breathtaking. I don't want to see them in camo doing an army crawl under barbed wire defending our country. I don't need our women to do that. So it breaks my heart that there's such a push. Let's make sure that we show that women can do everything that men can do and that men must do everything that women do. And there's a blurring of any distinction. God made men and God made women, and both are glorious. Both are sinners, and we see perverted twisting. But see, here's the problem. I believe too often we're reacting to an abuse of what it's supposed to be like, and we throw the baby out with the bathwater. Does that make sense? Let's not do that. All right, that was all random, not in the notes, to the notes. Ready? I want to show you three big roles of what I think from Scripture, from the Bible. Never mind, let's not take our cues from Hollywood. Let's not take our cues from just men doing surveys and deciding what we think our role ought to be. When you really want to know, what am I supposed to do as a man? What would it look like to be a man, to be a godly man? We should turn to the Scriptures, and the Scriptures speak to it. So here we go. Three big roles that I think you see for the husband in particular. Number one. Whoop. All right, I'm going to blow something up. Maybe there's a different clicker than this was left. Maybe this goes to Ken Sandy's laptop. But I don't see the one I had last night that had a little... Red button. Red button looks like a little beam thing. Oh. So I should push the red button? Yeah. See, this is undermining all that I wanted to show, that men are intelligent and we don't just blow. This is so humiliating. See, a woman would have this thing going. I honestly don't know what to do. Roman numeral 1, leader. The husband is to lead his wife. But it's going to move fast. Won't be there long. Number 1 role, leader. He's a leader. The husband is to lead his wife. And we're starting with the issue of leadership because that's what you see communicated by the order in creation. Man was created first. The biblical foundation, new slide please, the biblical foundation for the husband's leadership. Let's talk about it. As soon as you say leader, some of you kind of tense up. Because if you had a bad experience, can people abuse a position of leadership? Absolutely. But the fact that it's ever been abused, we have a tendency to say, let's throw out all leadership. And there's a tendency to think, oh, we're all just going to do this together. Even like in the church, there's such pushback sometimes. We don't want there to actually be leaders who make decisions. It's we're all going to decide this. When everybody decides everything, have you ever noticed how awful it is? There was some car that was created, I forget the name of it, by GM, and it was a committee that did it. It was one of the ugliest, foulest, most poorly put together cars I've ever seen. I got somebody on my staff now who I love, but he was with Procter & Gamble for years, and he wants to do a focus group and a survey on everything. Well, let's do a focus group and see what people are thinking about that, and then we'll roll out the bulletin for 6 weeks and get input. No, we won't. It's like, this is the new bulletin. Hello. Because you're going to have people that love it. You're going to have people that hate it. Leaders need to lead. We need leadership. What do you want me to do right now as a leader? Okay. So, yeah, I didn't think so. I feel better. Ah, on the floor. Okay, thank you. All right, give it up for Justin. Woo! That's why he makes the big bucks. To solve those kind of problems right there. So based on the order of creation, it establishes leadership. 1 Timothy 2:13 says, for it was Adam who was first created and then Eve. So by virtue of order and creation, God established Adam as a leader. But that's not the only reason we say, well, the man's the leader. God declared the husband to be the leader. These verses are still in the Bible, folks. The fact, let me say it again, and I'll keep saying, the fact that the way God says it should be done has been abused should never cause us to say, forget the way God said to do it, it doesn't work. Same thing on parenting. I'm going to step into another hornet's nest maybe. The Bible speaks about corporal punishment, spanking. Has it been abused? Are there poor women in Walmart jerking their kids around, screaming, and they start hitting on them when they're so angry? Yes. Is that a biblical spanking? Is that what I did? You don't even know me, but no, no, no. We had the laundry room, and I had my spanking Bible. Not that I spanked them with the Bible. It was my Bible right there where I'd read them a few verses about exactly what's going on, and God calls Daddy, if Daddy truly loves you, to spank you. It was calm. It wasn't a furious thrashing scene where they're trying to get away, and I'm smacking them all over, head, back, get in here. No, on the bottom. But did it hurt? Yes, the little pat, pat, pat. That's not a spanking. But that's a different workshop. It's not even mine right now. But you can see so many things, because they get abused, then we're done with that. And now it's, you can't be done with husbands being the leader. We need to help husbands understand what the Bible says about it and stop taking their cues from the world and stop allowing their sinful, selfish heart to twist it and pervert it. But we got to stay with what God's word says. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the savior of the body. So, let's get a biblical view of husband's leadership. All right? Biblical view of what this means when we talk about leadership. Matthew 20:25 puts us in the ballpark. But Jesus called them to himself and said, you know the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. It is not so among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave, just as the Son of Man, who's that? He's talking about himself. One of the phrases in Daniel that he loved to quote about himself, Son of Man, Son of Man. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to what? So he's connecting how he led as a servant to how we're supposed to lead. When you're the leader, guess what? You're the biggest servant. You're the biggest servant. You're the biggest servant. and to give his life a ransom for many. So whenever we use this word leadership, you better stop and make sure you understand what we're talking about and what the Bible means by it. And sometimes it can be helpful, before you say what something is to stand up all the examples of what it's not. Because some of you may be thinking it and say, well, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this. Let me show you what I'm talking about. Here's what leadership, biblical, godly leadership, is not. It's not a lord it over them, Gentile view, dictatorial. The sinful heart has a tendency to take a position of leadership and become dictatorial. That's why even in 1 Peter 5, 2 to 11, where it's talking to the elders or pastors of a church, and I've memorized this as one of my passages, it says, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory. So I am supposed to lead. I'm supposed to give oversight, exercise oversight and authority, but not in a dictatorial way, not domineering over, but being examples. Same thing to the husband in the home. Not domineering over, servant leadership. So here's what it does not look like. So often when we think leadership, we think, okay, if I'm the leader, then it's me over the top of all these people. That's what a diagram would look like. Me over the top of the people that I am leading. But that's not what the Bible shows about leadership. Here's what biblical leadership is. Servitude, serving. Biblical leadership is servitude. The focus is on helping those God has placed around you to grow, and that starts with your wife and children. So biblical leadership is an upside-down kingdom. We can take that same diagram and just flip it around, and here's what it looks like. So I am the leader, and I do have authority, and I do have to make decisions, and I do have to lead. And leaders need to be looking a little ahead of everybody else. And many times they'll have to say things, do things, make decisions that everyone's not going to like. But as I do it, I am to be with a mindset of, how can I equip and encourage and help and lead these people? I'm the leader, and I'm serving and equipping and helping. Just that difference in your mind can really help. Here I am, and this should be me in my home, and this should be me with our church. Servant leadership. The real test, and here's the deal, when you say, okay, if men are to lead and leading is serving, then the real test of whether or not someone's a servant is how you respond to someone who treats you like one. See, it's interesting, all day long we can say, okay, I get it, I'm on board, I'm all in, all right? Leadership is serving, I'm the servant, I'm the biggest servant. But if you bow up, whoo, when someone treats you like a servant, it shows that your heart hadn't really gotten around that and decided, yeah. How do you respond when someone treats you like one? I've never forgotten the story about my Bible professor. I went to Columbia Bible College in Columbia, South Carolina, and then Columbia Biblical Seminary. But while I was there as a student, the president was Robertson McQuilkin. His father, R.C. McQuilkin, had been the previous president. And the story was told, true. It's a true story. And I've never forgotten. It stuck with me, and I saw how his own son also had that same characteristic. Robertson McQuilkin, or R.C. McQuilkin, was asked to speak. I mean, he's the president of Columbia Bible College, and he was asked to speak at a retreat that was taking place at a hotel in Asheville, North Carolina. He'd gotten there a little early, and since it was early, there were people setting up chairs in the main auditorium where the conference was going to take place. So he just took off his sport coat, rolled up his shirt sleeves, and went in there and started setting up chairs with them and helping out. And they were getting chairs in the foyer and bringing them in. When he went out to get another stack of chairs, he's got his sleeves rolled up, a woman at the counter of the hotel checking in with her bags on the floor next to her spins around and says, "Boy, take these bags to my room." Robertson went over, picked up her bags, without a word, got on the elevator with her, went up to the room, carried them into her room, set them down. She didn't thank him. He leaves. Imagine imagine what she thought that night as she's sitting there for her Bible conference with her little colored pencils and Bible and notepad, as that same man in tie and coat got up as the keynote speaker for the conference. That shows you have a heart that has decided it's not all about who I am. Someone wants to treat me that way, I'll step right into it. The real test of whether or not, and see, some of you men, you're pushing back a little bit, saying, well, if she would respect me and she would treat me and she would. You lead. You become the servant now, not because you feel like anyone in the home deserves it. Too often we're playing this game of, when she'll start doing what God says she should do, I'll start doing what God says I should do. Let me help you out there, because it's so often a stalemate, and chicken and the egg, which came first, who's supposed to change first? I can help you there. You are supposed to change first. Men. Every time. Does that mean you're most wrong? The answer to that is no. I know you ladies might have thought, yes, that's why he's supposed to change first. No. We're supposed to change first because here's the deal. A, God called us to lead. Leaders should take the initiative. We lead out. And here's the deal. I've lived it myself, and I've seen it so many times play it out. God made us to initiate and lead, and God made women as responders. You would be amazed how she'll begin to respond to you differently. Not in a weekend. I have guys come back and say, I was nice all weekend. She's still the same. Go away. How long have you been beastly? Oh, about 17 years. A weekend isn't going to fix that. You know, one weekend, she's still real head cocked to the side thinking, what does he want? He wants a new four-wheeler. He wants sex. He wants to go to the Super Bowl this year. Something's up. It's going to take more than a weekend. You just get on this path, and I guarantee you, if you stay on this path, you will begin to see change, and she'll respond. It starts with us, men. Here's a difference, to put some things in perspective, between the dictator and the godly leader when we're talking about leadership. The dictator is proud. The godly leader should be humble. The dictator usually has no accountability. The godly leader is accountable to others around him. Your wife, listen, this whole deal with husband and wife doesn't mean she can't speak to you. She can't tell you things about you that she sees. She can't tell you when you're wrong. This whole thing of she's supposed to submit does not mean she shuts her mouth and you get to be beastly and sinful and clueless and she's never supposed to say anything. You're humble and you're accountable. Is that easy? No. When Vicky's starting to rebuke me, I'm not so stupid as not to know. I think I'm about to be rebuked here. I think this is a correction. Oh, God of heaven, help me. This is, wow, here we are. Because in the flesh, you're just thinking, oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? Really? Let me say everything I've been wanting to say about you, right? Because we're so prideful, so sinful. So you have to bite your tongue and think, yes, Lord, I need to hear this. It doesn't matter what you think she's been doing or this. You're accountable. You receive things. You make all the decisions, the dictator, without counsel. The godly leader seeks counsel. So listen, saying someone's a leader and they've got to lead and they've got to make decisions doesn't mean you don't get input and listen and say, well, what are you thinking about this? As we tried to make a decision to move from homeschool to public school, I had to ask lots. I didn't have to, but if you want to be biblical, you do. I asked lots of questions. I listened to her fears, not for a weekend, for 2 years before I finally pulled the lever and said, and I was doing it for her, not just because I thought, now don't hear me saying I'm against homeschool. Don't hear me saying no woman should do it through high school. My wife, I'm supposed to love and lead and shepherd and care for my wife. I thought my wife was going to have a nervous breakdown. Okay? Different personalities are different. She always thought, oh, we've not done enough. They don't know Greek. They don't know Latin. They don't know higher mathematics. Oh, she's at the dining room table till like 11 o'clock every night getting ready for lessons. We had 5 kids. She's trying to teach chemistry once. She's trying to teach one to read. And she's the pastor's wife and all the meetings are happening in our home, right? Phone's ringing off the hook. I said, we're not getting this. She's sitting down in Walmart. She's calling me saying, I had to sit down. I have these chest pains. It kept happening. Yeah, out of love, after 2 years, I said, we're taking older kids to public high school. Now, if you would ask her, she thanks me. All right? So that's an example of where you lead, but you've listened and you care and you move slowly, making sure that even if, you know, she would never have done it if I just said, all right, another focus group, what are you thinking? No. Oh, another survey, what are you thinking? No. But I did listen, I did understand her fears, her concerns, and then I said, this is what we're doing. You do get counsel. Dictators guilty of sinful communication, usually anger, lies, manipulation, bullying. Godly leader uses biblical communication that Steve Ayers is going to go through with you today, I believe. You got the rest. I don't think there's blanks to fill in. You can just read them and see some of the contrast down through there. The greatest example of servant leadership is Jesus. So guys, I want you to get this. The whole thing is tied back not to some mamby-pamby guy that I'm setting up before you and saying, don't be Rambo, but be this guy. No, I'll tell you who we're looking at. Don't be Rambo, and don't be the effeminate little doofus over here baking brownies that's not a real man. And I'm not saying if you bake brownies, you're not a real man. I got guys in my church that love to cook, so, and they're manly. Big forearms, manly. But Jesus. We want to keep looking to Jesus. And that's why it chafes me. You know, I said something last night. I hate the pictures of Jesus. We're not supposed to make pictures of Jesus anyway. But when they do, he just looks like he never lifted anything heavy. What a misnomer. He was a carpenter. I think his forearms would have been big. There would have been sawdust in his beard. He looked like he'd been out in the sun. You know, I don't think he ever probably had a fist fight, but he's a man. He was a man. He didn't walk like he was just confused. And he didn't wear skinny girl jeans, I'm sure. You know? He was a man. So guys, don't. This ought to be with it. I want to be like Jesus. And notice that man who was a carpenter, who stood up to people, who put together a whip and drove the money changers out of the temple. So there's a place for anger, righteous, godly anger. All the sense we have as a man sometimes to do something, it's not wrong. Just make sure what you do is motivated by the glory of God and not your own selfish interests. And that same man, Jesus, God man, laid down his, say it. That's one of the most manly things you can do. And so we're looking to him. You lay down your life. You sacrifice. You're the one that takes the hit. You're the one that's inconvenienced. You're a servant leader. One of the things you never see Jesus doing in the inappropriate, arrogant, bully kind of way, is saying, read through the Gospels, you don't hear him saying, do you know who I am? And they said to the disciples, who do men say that I am? But I'm talking about those people who are so quick that they want everybody to know who they are. That's why I shouldn't have to park my own car. And when I take my keys, I just throw them on the ground and you pick them up. Jesus wasn't like that. You know what I mean? I'm the Son of Man. I'm the Son of God. He didn't take that attitude. He didn't come across that way. And guys, whether you say it or not, if it's the air that you carry with you when you walk into a room, it is a very little insecure man who feels the need to constantly remind everybody who he is. Secure, manly, confident, godly men don't need to keep telling everybody who they are. Who they are, and aren't afraid to serve. And they aren't sitting there thinking, well, that mess just happened, or that person just spilled all that stuff. I'm not getting up and doing that. Or somebody just threw up. I'm not getting up and doing that. It's the insecure man. It really gets me when I hear men say, we raised four kids and I never changed a diaper. Well, you're an idiot. Yeah. I can't believe you're saying that out loud at a cookout here. You know? That's nothing to be proud of. There had to be times chaos was going on in that home and your wife was trying to do three things and supper's on the stove, someone's at the front door, the phone is ringing, and someone has a stinky, stinky diaper running down the leg, and you should have taken that and said, I'll take care of this. That's a man. That's leadership. You weren't just always in your chair, glued to the TV, clueless of what's going on around you. John 13, you see it with Jesus. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, that he'd come from God, was going to God, rose So I love how he brings out Jesus knew who he was, but his resume and his credentials and his identity didn't cause him to keep sitting there saying, for crying out loud, I'm the Son of God. I have all authority and power. I'm going back to heaven. I'm not getting up and washing feet. Somebody in this room that's a human being that's less than God should know to do this. And see, here's what's interesting. If you read this passage, the disciples on the way to the upper room had just had an argument amongst themselves, do you remember? About what? Who was going to be the greatest in the kingdom? So imagine having just had that argument, they were all sitting there thinking, well, this is going to look really bad. I can't get up and do that. No way. He rose from supper, laid aside his... And see, you got, in our culture, since we don't do this, we can't truly appreciate how humbling this looked. But in that day when it says laid aside his garment, he took off his outer robes, and basically you stripped down to your basic undergarments, and the towel was this long towel that you tied around yourself, and it had two long ends. And so there you are, stripped down of all your outer garments with this long servant towel tied around you. It's become part of you, and you're stooped down in front of people washing their feet. And feet were nasty back then, right? I mean, they didn't arrive by motor car. They walked, and the roads were dirty, and horses and donkeys were doing what horses and donkeys do. And as people talk and argue, they don't look where they're going, and feet have slopped through some of what donkeys do. And there weren't podiatrists then, so imagine, you think people have ugly feet today, and gross things going on, and toenails moved in different directions, all kinds of funky, gross stuff, plus poop. And he's down there, washing feet. I mean, of everything he ever said to them, of every parable he ever taught while they heard him speak to a crowd, I would think this shocked them more than anything. What is he doing? And we know it did because Peter, who was the one that so often said what everyone was thinking, just blurted out, "No, Lord, you will not wash my feet." They were shocked. What is he doing? He poured water into a basin, began to wash the disciples' feet, and wiped them with the towel with which he was girded. Guys, that's our model of leadership. And Jesus was a man. Could he get things done? Oh, yeah. Did he have righteous anger in appropriate moments? Oh, yeah. But when it was called for, he also knew when to serve. Do you know when to serve? And you're manly when you serve. Help. And listen to your wife. Depending on what season of life you're in, listen to what she's saying. My wife pulled me aside one time and said, "Honey, I need your help. When we go to, you imagine as a pastor, we're going to all kinds of cookouts and events, tons of things like that. We got five kids." She'd say, "When we go, it's like as soon as you leave the car, we've parked on the curb." And it wasn't just I ran from her like, "Oh!" I didn't. But what do you think happens? People come to me. And just I would be engaged in conversation nonstop. Not by my choosing necessarily, but just kind of is what it is. And then, you know, you just keep listening. "Yes, your aunt. Uh-huh. Yeah." And I would just fix my hamburger, get my potato salad, and it would just be nonstop till we left. And she's trying to fix five little plates plus her. She's trying to do this thing, you know, as she goes through the line. And she said, "I need your help. If you would just disengage and ask somebody, excuse me, I need to help her, just particularly for getting everybody's food, and then just maybe come up for air two or three times during the event and just look around, see if there's anyone on a splint or a stretcher, or our son is about to just do some triple gainer off the, you know, trampoline. Just be a part of it knowing we have kids." That would help me so much. Oh, I started doing that. But I literally, but I arrived thinking that way. And when someone would just halfway across the yard, they're already coming, I'm like, "Hang on just a minute." And I would help with the lawn chairs, and I would help with the three dishes that we brought, and I'd make sure everyone at least made it to the home uninjured before the event began. And then throughout it, I'd think to myself, as soon as they said, "All right, burgers are ready," I'd pull away and say, "I need to help my wife get the kids food." And then just a couple times, I would just kind of come up and see what was going on. Made all the difference in the world. That's servant leadership. So it doesn't mean I couldn't talk to anybody. It's like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm my wife's little servant. Can't talk to you. I'm just here for the kids and her." No. But I'm doing what I can. Number two, love her. So, guys, you are to lead her. And leadership means what? Oh, that was so sad. Okay? You're to lead her, and leadership means what? Serve. Servant leadership. Servant leadership. Servant leadership. Get that hyphenated. Keep it there. Servant leadership. Secondly, you're to love her. You're to love her. Which is not just a no-brainer, because it's interesting. In Ephesians 5, he says, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Verse 28, so husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. Verse 33, nevertheless, each individual among you, husbands, also is to love his own wife as himself. Two important observations here about this passage. This is a command to love. It's not an option or something you can take or leave. All those verb forms are in the imperative. It's a command. Love her, love her, love her. And he repeats it three times. Why do you think he repeats that three times? Here's what I think is interesting. Men tend to go around and I'm saying, submit, submit, submit. You got three love hers for every one submit. Right? Does the Bible say wives submit to your husbands? He says it once. You know why I think he says it once? Because I don't think that's the biggest problem we're up against. The biggest problem is we have men who don't truly love their wives, and they don't know what it means to demonstrate it and live it and show it consistently. If they did, I know there are exceptions, but let's not make the exception the rule, right? If they did, in almost every case, I find that when a woman is truly being loved in a biblical way by a man, she has no problem submitting to him. And so you might not like it, guys, but when I get a marriage, and I often do, where it's just, whoo, and I got a guy sitting there that keeps using the S word, and I'm not talking about the four-letter one. Sometimes he's got that going, too. But it's that submit. Well, she just submit. If she just submit, she never submits. If she just, I'm like, if you would just shut up. Because here's what I know. You're so focused on. Here's the other thing. Does God call men to make it their goal to see that their woman or wife submits? No. You're supposed to be so busy loving her, God calls her to submit. God tells her that, as unto the Lord. You're supposed to be, as soon as you get pushback and you get resistance and you got a problem, you should look at you and say, how am I failing in loving her? Why would I get a response like this? Have I not listened well? Have I not been loving her leading up to this moment? Why am I getting such pushback right now? Right? If I just come busting into the bedroom one day after she'd been in Walmart, squatted down, chest pains, and just said, that's it! Public school, all of them right now, mid-year, middle of the year. They don't know high school. They're going to have lockers. They're going to be beat up. We're doing it tomorrow. That's not loving, right? But as men, I know I'm a man. That's our tendency. We tend to just do too much, too fast, all of a sudden, because we're sick of it. So I wanted to pull that trigger long before I did. But God called me to love Vicki Dill Bigney. And loving her meant it took 18 months to 2 years to make that decision. And then when I did, she cried. Each child cried. I said, you're kidding me. You would do that? Yes, I would do that. Because I had boys who were in her face, right? At this point, I had 15, 16-year-old boys who were in her face. She can't get them out of bed. They're saying they don't know where their math book is. Yada, 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 yada. I'll spare you the details, but I just thought, they need someone besides their mama that's going to look at them and say, well, find your math book because you got zeros until you do. And it was amazing to me. They had their shoes and clothes outside their door. I said, it's up to you to set your alarm. We're not going to have a fight getting you out of bed like we do with homeschool. You better get up, go. And it's all your whole life's going to be based on your report card. You want a phone? It's based on your grades. You want to drive? It's based on your grades. You want oxygen? It's based on your grades. Okay? And all of a sudden he knew where his math book was and he could get there and he could do it. again, not saying no one should homeschool through high school. I'm saying with my wife, I wanted to love her, and I was hoping to have her later in life still alive and sane. I don't want to be places with her with a bib and she's drooling and she's just got this massive tick and her head just jerks constantly. She just says the word yellow, yellow, yellow. You know? I thought, I'm going to have nothing left here. This is not going well. So I loved her enough to lead us. Love her. John 13:1, it says, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end, to the end. He was a lover, a lover. Gary Thomas writes this, and some of you aren't going to like it, but I think there's a lot of truth here. He says, divorce represents our inability to hold to Jesus' command. It's giving up on what Jesus calls us to do. If I can't love my wife, how can I love the homeless man in the library? How can I love the drug addict or the alcoholic? Yes, this spouse might be difficult to love at times, but that's what marriage is for, to teach us how to love. You know what I think one of the biggest problems is? We have this notion of, I marry someone because I love them. I've got this feeling. I've never felt like this. I've never felt like I feel when I'm with you. And all of a sudden, that feeling doesn't just maintain at that same level. And we think, I loved her, and now I'm not feeling it. I guess it's over. No, 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 no. In marriage, it's a greenhouse for growing and learning to love. When you get married, you don't really understand love. It's in the context of marriage. When the makeup's off, when a few pounds have been gained, when the hair has been lost, when there's been fractious words, when there's disappointment, when the hot water heater breaks down, when the car is broken, when the kids are sick, when you lose a job, when the mother-in-law overly gets involved. It's in the context of all of that, folks. It's easy to love with Chinese and a movie and a walk at the park and Chinese and a movie and a walk at the park and the fair and branding cattle and a walk in the park. That's called dating, and you're on your best behavior, and it's not a real context. When you get married and you have a home and you have sickness and you have bills and you have trials, you learn to love. God's called us to learn to love and say, God, in this moment, I don't have it. I want to learn it. I want to learn it. I want to learn it. Allow your marriage relationship to stretch your love and to enlarge your capacity for love. And if you're sitting there saying, well, you don't know. You don't know. No, I had a wife who looked at me 4 years into our marriage in our mobile home and the car that hardly ever ran and two little kids, and I'm in seminary full time with Greek and Hebrew going in different directions. And she said, I don't love you. I feel nothing for you. I'm dead to you. That was right before choir practice. That was wonderful. And we moved on from there. So I've been there. I've been there. I didn't feel anything for her either. But as a man, I could just shift to my career and the church. And so I was fairly satisfied still. I thought, I don't think she's very happy with me. She doesn't seem to like me. Nothing I think I do pleases her. But I could just go hard at the church, and everyone's like, yay, we love you. So I was like, I'll take this. But those words got my attention. And I thought, how sad. We're both Christians. I'm a pastor. I did think it was going to be better than this. We both agreed that our marriage was like a Coke, 2-liter Coke that's been left out overnight with the lid off. It's still Coke. There's still some sugar. It's still dark. But the fizz is gone. No one wants to drink it, right? You pour it down the drain. And we moved from there and learned to love. And I'm telling you what, she is my BFFFFFFFFF. I mean, I used to hear people say, oh, my wife's my best friend. I was like, cannot even comprehend that. I was like, we are so different. I want to read all the time. She just thumbs through magazines backwards. I want music loud. I want it to hit us in the chest like there's music on. I want to feel it. She wants it way in the background, in even better, off. I could go on. I want to be the last one at the party. She wants to be the first one to leave. You know, I just had this whole list of, I've married the wrong person. My life is over. You're bringing me down, girl. Right? Sinful. Sinful. And now there's nobody I'd rather be with. And I still love to read. And she reads some books now as well as magazines. But largely we haven't changed, right? I'm on sabbatical. I've read 25 books She hasn't read 25 books, but it's okay. I play my music loud when she leaves the home. So as soon as she drives off and I can see the exhaust, I'm like, boom, I got a remote. I got a Bose Wave stereo. It's like, boom. I mean, the house is rocking. And the kids always know, mom's gone. And I keep the remote right by me if I'm in the kitchen or wherever. And as soon as I hear the garage door go up, I'm like, whoa. But here's what's funny. Because it's so loud, she can hear it from the garage sometimes. And she comes up and says, you don't have to turn it off. And then very often when she's there, I turn it off first. I mean, we want to prefer each other. We love each other. And we're not focused on the differences. We're delighting in what God's done for us. And he can do that for you. But guys, it starts with us. It starts with us. You got to love her. Love her. What are some wrong views of love? We can't just say, well, love her. Say, all right, I do. I heard so many men say, I love her. Got it. Love, here's some wrong notions. Love's a feeling. Love is not a feeling. It involves feeling many times. Hallelujah, it's wonderful when it does. I say feelings are the symphony that plays along with our choices, but you can make the right choices even when the symphony is silent. It's not just a feeling. It's not reduced to a feeling. Love is a choice. And it's much easier when the feelings are playing along with you, but you can choose to do it on days they're not. It's not just a feeling. So these are wrong notions. Love is sex. Love is far more than sex. Sex is just the icing in a marriage on a loving relationship. But it cannot be reduced to sex. Love is weak. We got a notion with men sometimes that, well, that's kind of a woman thing. That's kind of a feminine thing. That's kind of a frou-frou, you know, tea and doilies kind of thing. This whole love thing. I don't tell anybody I love them. They just know it. I provide. I brand steer and fix fences for the whole family, and I bring home the... No, guys, don't be ashamed of love. Don't be ashamed to let a tear run down your cheek. Don't be ashamed to say, I love you, and I'm proud of you, and I'm grateful for you. We need to speak words and not pull away from love as if it's just a feminine attribute. Jesus is a man, and he was loving. God is God, and he's loving. We should not be afraid of this, guys. So what's a biblical definition of love? Let me give you one. Love is giving for the needs of another without the ulterior motive of expecting anything in return. When you say, honey, I'll go ahead and rototill that garden you wanted to plant the tomatoes, but you're only doing it because you want something, that's not love. Love is giving for the needs of another, expecting nothing in return. That's how God loves us. If you're sitting there thinking, well, I can't do that. I shouldn't do that. I might be the loser. I might come out on the short end of the stick. I might. Let me show you the biblical basis for this definition of love. Galatians 2:20, the life I now live, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and what? Gave. You'll see love and giving tied together. Love, giving. Not love and feeling, love and give. Who loved himself, us and gave himself for us. John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. Ephesians 5:25, Christ loved the church and gave. You give, you give, you risk, you open up. Even when you think you can't give anymore and you don't want to and the feeling's not there, you are loving your wife when you give for the needs of another with no ulterior motive expecting something in return. Real men think and act like Jesus Christ, the greatest lover. Real men think and act like Jesus Christ, the greatest lover. McQuilkin, son of Robertson McQuilkin, son of R.C. McQuilkin, Robertson, I was there at the Bible College when his wife Muriel, so here he is, he's president now of our Bible College. He's writing books on ethics and missions and hermeneutics, the study of the Bible. He's traveling and speaking at conferences. He was a significant man in the prime of his career and ministry. He was like 53 years old. And Muriel has degenerated to the point with Alzheimer's that she is leaving their house that was a mile from the office on campus and walking so many times a day. She couldn't be contained by the caregiver. So many times a day to his office that her feet were bleeding every night. She was never content unless she was with him. He announced in chapel, and I'll never forget, that he was stepping down to take care of Muriel full-time in their home himself. Moved off campus, got a little house, I still remember, I was still a seminary student, so this was a main boulevard, Monticello, that you'd go down, and I'd go down, go to the doctor, wherever I needed to go, and I would always look to the left because there was a screened-in porch, and so often I would see Robertson McQuilkin, this man I knew who'd lectured to us brilliantly on hermeneutics, who'd traveled teaching on missions and blah, 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 and he'd be on the swing with his arm around Muriel, sitting with someone who cannot even converse about all these things, taking care of her. That's love. That's love. Love. And he says that he was shocked by the response of the world and the Christian world and how many people have told the story. And he says that he went to, trying to get help to understand better how to do this, he went to a caregiver seminar, you know, supposed to help people like him understand how to go through a time like this. And he talks about how the person just kept saying that the only reason anyone does this, doesn't put someone in a home but takes care of themselves, is because of financial or economic reasons they can't afford to do something different, or out of guilt. And he went up to the woman leading it during the break and said, really? Isn't there another option? Couldn't this be done out of love? And she quickly said, oh, we put that under the category of guilt. You know what that says to me? Our world is so clueless on what real love looks like, it doesn't even have a category for it. It doesn't know what to do with it. Remember Jesus said, they'll know you're my disciples by your vast knowledge of end time charts. By your amazing understanding of spiritual gifts and surveys and how to determine what yours are. By your love. I mean, the world just says, what? 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 Did you ever think about, you don't have to be a pastor, guys. You don't have to have the gift of teaching. The way you love your wife could be the greatest sermon you ever preach. And when we see it, you know what I'm talking about. It's not just me. When you see a man carrying his wife who can't walk from the car into a restaurant and taking care of her, getting her settled and helping her, whenever we see, I don't want to discount you ladies. We see ladies, I believe, just sacrifice and serve constantly. And thank you. I don't want to discount it. But guys, when the world sees a man love like that, they don't know what to do with that. It is one of the most powerful testimonies. How are you loving your wife? And she doesn't have to be handicapped for you to put on display real love. Real love. And an oncologist told Robertson, almost all women stand by their men. Very few men stand by their women. Statistics show men, when they have a wife who needs care, they ditch them. So when you have a man who really loves, really cares, and stays, it is such a powerful testimony. So what degrees of love are we to show? We love first. It starts with us because he loved us. We love first. Guys, don't wait around for her. You lead out. We love first because he first loved us. We love most. If there was a competition in the home as to who was the biggest lover, guys, you should win every time. I think too often we're thinking, well, no, I'm known for all this other stuff to do. We should be known as the greatest lover. Don't let the kids think, oh, mom's that one that's so loving. Dad's just, he's not like that. Men aren't like that. Most. Sacrificially is how we're to love. It should cost us. It should cost us something. Don't just do what's convenient, guys. And I'm not just talking about you bought her a new Lexus for her birthday. Sometimes that's easy. Sometimes it's easier to write a check than it is to... Here's what I'm talking about. You're sitting in your chair, you're reading, that's me. Your wife's at the dining room table working on something, and she talks to herself sometimes. She's not saying this to tell me. She's like, oh, I need a yellow highlighter. And I say, oh, I'll get you one. They're downstairs in the cabinet. She's like, oh, no, I didn't mean for you to. No. Now, I'm not telling that like I'm so great, I always do that. I don't. But sometimes the Holy Spirit actually, because I'm asking God, help me to love her. It's like he actually brings me out of my little book world and says, say you'll go get that. I'm like, I'll get that. And then I insist. Or I come home and I've had long day, long meetings, but she's cooked a meal. And I sense the Holy Spirit say, tell her you want to clean up the kitchen. She's like, no, honey, I'll do it. I said, no, I want to do that. I'll clean the kitchen. Now, I love to play loud music while I do. So I'm going to do kitchen cleaning music while I do this. So run and hide in the bedroom. But I'll say, no. When we had little kids, often I would try to surprise her and say, you know what? You go take a bubble bath. She loves bubble baths. You go take a bubble bath. I'll clean the kitchen, get the kids in bed. Don't hear me saying I did this every night. but I tried to ask God, help me to do things that cost me, not what's just easy. I didn't feel like it. I'm thinking, I'm so tired. I've had such a long day. Tomorrow's another long day. Right then's a great time to say to the flesh, yeah, we're going to clean the kitchen. We're going to love. We're going to love like Jesus. Sacrificially. What are you doing each day for your wife that involves sacrifice? Unmistakably, it needs to be love in a way that she understands it. Too often guys are saying, I love her. I look at the woman and say, do you feel loved? No. And he just gets mad. Well, news alert, dude. Ask some questions and figure out what communicates love to her. It's not that complicated and it's not that mysterious, but you've got one woman to learn. And too often guys act like, she's so weird, she's so complicated. You don't have to know all women. You're supposed to learn one. And you got a lifetime to do it. But get going on it. In spite of faults. Not because she deserves it. How does God love us? But God demonstrates his own love towards us. And while we were yet some of the best kids worthy of... No. While we were yet, say it. Christ loved us. You demonstrate it in spite of her faults. And lastly, learner. So I love this. This is memorable for me. I can remember this. When Stuart Scott taught this to me in our counseling, I'm to be a leader, lover, learner. I've never forgot it. Leader, lover. And this last one, I don't have time to unpack it in detail, but this last one was a game changer for me because I love to read. I'm a learner. And I realized when I got married, when I stood at the altar on September 27th, 1986 and said, I do, I had taken an attitude of we're done. I do and we're done. Now I can have sex and it's not a sin. Hallelujah. But I'm done. As far as the marriage, that was not a good approach. And think about it, guys. What you love, we keep learning. You get fishing magazines to know what the latest lure is and the fishing reel is and where are the fish. And we get magazines about the football teams. I've got a thing on my phone that's an app that tells me right now what's going on in NFL football. Things we love, we keep learning and keep learning and keep learning. You say you love your wife. You should be a learner and think, God, teach me more about her. Help me to understand her. Help me to pick up on cues. Help me to listen. Help me to know. Ask questions. Ask questions. Ask questions. Help me, honey, to understand what's going on here. Help me to understand what you're thinking. Help me to understand why that bothered you. We're to be a learner. First Peter. I'm sorry, right there. First Peter. Husbands, likewise, live with your wives in an understanding way as with a weaker vessel, since she's a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir so that your prayers may not be hindered. Understanding way right there is the Greek word pedasko. That's a classroom term for a student. You go to school on your wife. Go to school on your wife for a lifetime. God, help me to understand her. And it's a command. I'm going to have to go fast. I'm going to go fast. You write fast. And if you don't get them, I'll send you the thing to you with the blanks filled in. See, so often we act like, woman is so complicated. I can't understand her. God's not going to command you to do something you can't do. Just keep remembering that. You married her, and he commands you to learn her. He will help you learn her. But you're going to have to get it on your agenda. And think, I'm going to have to listen. I'm going to have to take her for a walk and listen. I'm going to have to go out to eat and ask questions and listen. I've gone out with my wife a number of times with a list of questions. You can get them from Lou Priolo's book, The Complete Husband. There's some great questions in that book, and I've given them to her and said, answer these, and let's go out to dinner, and I want to know, you know, what could I do different? What would encourage you? What would make things better? What am I doing that irritates you the most? What am I not seeing? And then listen. I didn't take the duct tape with me, but I listened. It's a command that requires time. This is going to take some time. It's going to require some study. It's a command that includes being mindful of her weakness. It doesn't mean she's weaker positionally. Does not mean she's weaker intelligently. She might be 10 times smarter than you. It doesn't mean she's weaker in endurance. We know that because we know who has the babies. If we had to have babies, the human population would have already died out. And honoring is a command. Honor her. Honor her. Learn her. Honor her. And both these commands impact the husband's spiritual life because it says, lest your prayers be hindered. If you're not doing what God calls you to do, to live with her in an understanding way and learn her, your prayers are just bouncing off the ceiling. I don't want my prayers bouncing off the ceiling. Leader, lover, learner. For a lifetime. All right, stay right here. Blake's going to come give you some instructions for the rest of the morning. But ladies, remember, don't bring this up to him. Pray.